What day is it?
We will attempt to explain all as the show unfolds. Welcome, audience, to the season finale of season 7 of Mention and Dispatches. I think we made it to episode 14, I think is where we ended up here. But we're coming into the holiday season, and so we're gonna put a bow on this and then go get drunk for the holidays while trying to plan the January AC/DC, and then pick up Mention and Dispatches in late January, early February, once we recover from our winter convention. So tonight, around your podcast dial, coming back for what may become a regular seasonal appearance. Brian, you tell us. Our buddy Boyer is back. Brian, how are you?
I am humbled and honored.
Why?
I mean, it's us.
for whatever it's worth.
It's the finale.
Well, there's that. There is that. Our semi-occasional irregular co-host, BB Mike. Mike, how are you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Still waiting on that first paycheck for all this work, but I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah, me too. For what it's worth, as we were mentioning briefly right before we went on, you were the channel of the week on Gary's counterclipping show this week.
I was the channel of the week.
Each week, he highlights somebody else's YouTube channel that he thinks need more subscribers. And my own worst enemy was this week's channel that he wanted to highlight and has a link in his show, link to you below the show in the show notes. And
That's pretty cool. That must have been the last episode, because I usually try to – I don't watch them live. I'd like to, but I usually end up watching them like a day or two later.
No, this was last night's. As we are recording this, it was last night. It was the one where Gary was talking about classic war games getting remade, and then also talking some about Chris Dean. Gary's counterclipping show, I normally catch anywhere from 20 to 40-ish minutes of the show on Monday nights, and then I watch the rest of it. I listen to the rest of it while I'm working on finalizing Tuesday Newsday the next day, but I managed to miss almost the entire show yesterday. Just there were too many other things going on here. So. And then the fourth voice in the crowd, our good buddy Jim is back. Cyrano, how are you?
Good evening. Doing well. Thank you very kindly.
Before we dig into tonight's topic, Jim, you had a coronary on Twitter today.
Well, it's funny because you raised the issue separately and I had already had the coronary. Let's be clear. Volker Runke, he who is to be admired, had commented in another conversation about the P500 list from GMT Games and how it's all driven by the, you know, you've got to go down there and get those purchases and get those commitments, because when it gets to 500, boom, that's how it gets published. And when I saw that, I went, oh, pumpkin, no. I mean, it's absolutely true that if something doesn't get to 500, it'll never see the light of day. Fair enough. And by the way, I think it's a great system. I do. It's Gene and them learned from the collapse of the 90s, figured out a system to keep them in business, and boom, awesome on them. But the idea that by ascending to the heights of 500 that, oh, now you're in the production queue and, oh, get your wallets ready because the games are coming. Oh, no. Oh, no. And quite honestly, it's now much, much more. Well, it's a little bit of both. One is like a P 1000. And the other one is Gene really likes this game more than the other game.
Yeah.
His company. But, you know, and let me be very particular, lest I be accused of hiding my bias. Commands and Colors, Napoleonics, the Grand Battles has been parked at over 1,000 backers for 3 years.
And it's been more than three, because you griped about this on our previous podcast and we've been doing Mention and Dispatches for 3.5.
Okay. So so that's how long that's what I should do. When did it, can they tell us when it was? So I'm going to look that up. But so the point is, you know, and along the way, games have come and gone and been published with fewer. And this notion that, oh, it's such a grand pipeline that will, the minute you ascend to the lofty heights of 500, whoosh, out it goes.
I knew that's how everybody was going to read what was written in Volko's tweet there. And the tweet is down below this episode. You guys can all go see it as we're talking about it. I really think the point Volko was trying to make, because people were asking, there are lots of other Levian campaign games using that Levian campaign system that are currently in development all over Europe by, quite frankly, I think it's a bunch of European designers working on it. Like, hey, that's kind of a cool system. I could use that for my country's history. And you know, God bless them. Go do it. Like, fresh blood in the design world is great. And I'm not going to you know, rain on that parade at all. I think the point Volko was trying to make when people were asking about what about getting these published was until we get the current ones on P500 out the door, those other ones are not going to make it for sure. And so you've got to get your P500 pledges in to try and get these out the door first before any of these others in development are going to get moving. The laughter of it all, of course, is that somehow making the, you know, clearing some magic arbitrary number indicating a guarantee of publication, I think, is the part that we all know is farcical. For what it's worth, I did go and look. Jim, if you will recall your initial diatribe on this from some number of years ago, long enough ago that I think my college-age son was still in junior high. Your original gripe about this was that your Commands and Colors Napoleonic Grand Battles game was stuck behind what in the queue?
Mystery Wizard.
And I went to go look. You want to know where Mystery Wizard is in the publication queue at the moment?
Oh, don't tell me it's moved up at the printer.
Oh, no, it's okay. Not at the printer. It's made the cut. It's still sitting there, and it has about half the orders that your Napoleon, your CNC Grand Battle.
And to that point, go peek up into the list above it, which is at the printer.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the first three games there, they've all got it. Empire of the Sun, fourth printing, does not.
Yeah.
You know, Plains Indian Wars, does not. Red Storm, Baltic Approach, does not. Salerno 43, Mounted Map, different question. The GMT Vietnam 1965-1975, which I have backed, it does not. It has barely more. So what gives here?
I got a conspiracy theory here.
Go. What is your? I'm into conspiracy theories.
Wooden blocks.
Could be. Although I will say this, and I know Richard Borg pretty well. He and I have talked many times. He has struggled with GMT to convince them to print things. Now, I am very glad to see up in Charging Final Production that Commands and Colors Ancients is now entering its seventh printing. But he, in the past, has had to pay Gene up front to get that out the door. He's had to give him money. Why? Because he said, I can't possibly move the expansions for Commands and Colors Ancients, of which I think there are 12,000. I can't move those unless I can sell the base game. And I can't sell the base game if you're out of stock. So he's regularly had to kind of prime that pump just to keep it in stock. So
to be fair, CNC Ancients, when they do get a new printing in, it's gone quick.
Yep.
It doesn't hang around the warehouse very long. Even if occasionally it hangs around your store shelf for a little while, as far as GMT is concerned, like, that's out the door. I don't have to worry about it anymore. I've got my wholesale money for it. They don't hang around. Like, the CNC base games, they're not quite to the level of Twilight Struggle. They move. Like, those aren't just sitting around waiting. It's not like they're carrying a massive backlog of those things, hoping to God they sell and maybe have to cut the price on them. The CNC base games get off the shelf in a hurry.
Yes.
So,
yes.
So you can't manage to keep those in stock.
You know, and I understand your analysis, Brand. I think you're correct. And you know, all that being said, you know, there's a Napoleon exhibit going on at the Louvre and at the National Army Museum in Paris, and I can't be there. And in addition, there's, you know, things I'm angry about. They just did an Austerlitz Kriegspiel that nobody seems to want to put online so I can see it. And to top it all, I am still sitting here however many years later, and I'm trying to track it down exactly when I first posted about it, waiting for Le Grand Battle. So, just a bunch of Napoleonic bitterness to start your holiday season.
I do have a question for you. At that Napoleonic exhibit over in Paris, do they have a sign at the entryway that says you must be at least this tall to enter this exhibit?
your filthy, filthy insult of the Corsican's diminutive stature, which is, of course, British propaganda of the worst sort, will not stand.
Yes, but people laughed at my quip.
He's got a million of them, folks. He'll be here all week.
Hey, in the same vein that we're talking about Command and Conquer, I just want to tell you how much I hate putting stickers on blocks. I absolutely despise it. I still buy the games, don't get me wrong. But I just hate put. I can hardly see what the hell I'm doing at my age.
Okay, we're not even 15 minutes into this podcast, and I bet you anything Wayne Hantz is working on a rebuttal video right now.
Well, let me see it coming. Would you believe, and it is true, my beloved stickers my blocks for me.
Oh, you are so lucky.
Yeah, she it was actually one of the nicest Christmas gifts I've ever gotten. Actually, it might have been an anniversary present.
Brian's busy sending Jim an email.
She brought me this big freaking box and just set it down in front of me. Wasn't even wrapped. I opened it up and it was the entire, to that time, Commands and Colors Ancients collection. Ooh. And a statement right on the top. Yes, I will sticker them for you.
Yeah, it's just even just trying to center the damn stickers. I'm all over the place.
I try never to speak in these terms because it's usually not true. I'm just convinced women are better at it than men.
No doubt.
You know, she is like ace on that. It's amazing.
For what it's worth, Brian, should you order any of the block games from Vento Nuovo, the Italian publisher?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
They have a stickering service. You can pay to have your block shipped pre-stickered.
That's crazy.
I am not kidding. It is in their storefront. If you go to the Vento Nuovo website, it is in the store that they have a block stickering service. You can pay to have your block shipped to you pre-stickered.
I'd pay for that.
I think clearly people do because they continue to offer it. I've gotten, of course, all the Napoleonic games, and I thought about it, but those I actually did myself, and yes, it turned out worse. So there it is.
Yeah.
If you have one of those games, it's old enough. You end up stickering your own dice as well too, not just the cubes.
Oh yeah, no. Well, now that's the other thing about my Napoleonics. I've shared this story before. I was up very late one night. I could not get to sleep, and I went onto eBay, and I suddenly discovered somebody selling the wooden and the CNC dice.
I saw those.
They were the special ones, and I went, how much they want? And I might have been drinking, and I went in there, and I discovered they were, I think they wanted $8 a set. I think I ordered 8 sets. Just the different memoir and CNC Ancients and, of course, Napoleonics. And I'll even though I do it all virtually these days, I will never go back because they are very lovely. I like them. But you're right. And that is why most of those dice have remained stickered, which is part of the thing. We've talked about this. This is why Compass is so far ahead of GMT, at least in terms of their components, because the components in CNC Tricorder are so much nicer. Yes, they are.
They are very nice. I agree.
I think it really differs from game to game as far as the components. I mean, some of the I'm not sure recently, but some of the Compass maps in the past have been, I would say lackluster. They're just so thin, easy creases on them. The rest of the components are usually nice, especially the rule books. But some of the maps. Ugh.
I think Compass has changed some of their production options over the last 5-ish years, that may be a little longer even than that, that most Compass components these days are pretty top-notch. They're pretty far up there. Now, there are some occasional production gaffes, like the Korea game had some horribly miscut counters that kind of blew up into a thing when people were first getting their Korea game shipped to them. That turned into a bit of a PR mess, but the counter sheets themselves and the counter artwork were all great. It's just the cutting was screwed up. But I think the Compass Games production process, whoever it is they're using for the printing or whatever group of printers they're using, it has definitely upped the game for Compass over the last 5-ish years or so, that you really don't run into a whole lot of problems with Compass production quality these days.
They'll usually send you stuff out if they screwed up.
I was going to say that was with the Compass. They are very good about getting you replacements quickly. So there's
that was part of the problem with Korea, is that they weren't.
I will forever saddle them, however, with the fact, and I shared this during our Compass review this year, that when they put out Sovereign of the Seas, They listed one of the squadrons on the map as the Breast Squadron, except they spelled it with an A.
Maybe intentionally.
Yeah, you know what? I might have, because it's on the map that way, so it's not like they were going to replace the whole map. I might very well have gone, what? You didn't think that was funny? We thought that was pretty sweet.
That's where you ship the sticker to just slap on the map with the correct spelling.
Yeah, there you go.
Let's also, in passing, we will note that Compass has had the exact same typo of a Napoleonic battle game in their catalog for 4 years running at this point.
Accurate.
In any event, we are not here to necessarily make fun of some publishers, although that's never stopped us. We'd much rather make fun of each other, I think, is definitely true.
That's for a fact.
But one of the things, so as we are winding down our season here and we are heading into the holiday season here in the U.S., and you know, look, whenever people are listening to this podcast, they can be listening to it in June. I don't care. But as we're winding this up and the contemporary time in which we are recording, we're going into the holiday season. So I thought it would be fun to take a little bit of time and offer some of our holiday wishes to the wargaming world. What are some of the things that if Santa could bring us something for the wargaming world, whether it's something for a particular designer or a company or something you would really love to see or whatever it might be, what are some of your wargaming wishes for the wargaming and strategy gaming community out there? Brian, we're going to lead off with you as the less regular dude here. What's a wargaming wish you would love to see out there?
Well, way to put me on the spot, but luckily I'm so quick-witted, I have something. Empires and Arms. Why hasn't it been remade? It needs to be remade.
I give up. Why hasn't it been remade?
Maybe Jim knows. I don't know.
Oh, I certainly, any number of people have tried. You know, shoot, Compass has two pretenders. You know, and any number of other people have tried. My guess as to why it hasn't been remade, I think the closest you would get, what is the name of that Compass game? Is it Nations at War?
Yes.
You know, that's obviously their pretender to that throne. My answer is going to be, it's really, really hard to catch that much lightning in a bottle. Yeah, I mean, it's an amazing, what can I say? It's an absolute, it's a gold standard. You know, to me, it's like you play some of these introductory games like Napoleon in Europe by our friend of Dragoons, Glenn Frank Dover. You then climb yourself up to War and Peace by Mark McLaughlin and maybe Mark McLaughlin's, you know, Napoleonic Wars. And then at the top of it, if you're really nuts, you go to Empires and Arms.
Yep.
And it is interesting. It is very, very interesting that no one's taken a straight shot at it. That's
So the immediate question that comes, so for the audience that may not know, just to make sure, we're talking the 1983 Avalon Hill Empires and Arms, correct?
Correct, yes. But it was made by somebody before that. Even.
It was Australian Design Group before that, and then Avalon Hill grabbed it and ran with it.
Right. So
I just wanted to make sure for the audience that we were all, you know, singing out of the same hymnal here. I think your biggest challenge is, quite frankly, who's got the rights to it?
Yep.
And with Avalon Hill having been absorbed into Hasbro and Hasbro being very reluctant to license out any of the old Avalon Hill game IP, I don't know. First of all, some publishers got to get the hair up their ass and says, hey, I really want to do this because I can actually make some money off of it. Then they got to go to Hasbro and figure out, how do I sell this to Hasbro so that Hasbro gets their pound of flesh and I can still make money off of it.
Right.
And I'm just, given the number of other grand strategic Napoleonic games out there that are in a similar space, what's the real market for this besides nostalgists? And that would be a big question. I'm not pretending I know the answer, but you've got to answer that before you make a decision to try and redo this. So,
well, don't forget Matrix did a PC version, which has been in development for 70 years now.
I was about to say it's before 1983, I think.
They actually updated that fairly recently.
Yes. They did. Mm-hmm. And I reloaded it and I poked at it and it's still it.
You did more than I did.
I won't say that it's the unfilmable movie. You know, it's like what everybody said about Dune once upon a time. You know, that it's, you can't film it. It's too much. Or there's some other movies that have been that's been said
you
about.
Couldn't under the conditions they were trying to work 30 years ago.
Right. But it's my
capabilities these days.
Yeah. My point only being that, you know, I don't know how well it fits into the digital space. I just don't. I think it's always had a bad UI. It still has a bad UI that's not been improved. And ultimately, problem one with Empires in Arms is it's a lifestyle choice game. It's six dudes who spend either a regular session time, you know, they pick their Friday night or whatever it is, or like I did, you take a long weekend and you play one game for that weekend. The niche there is small, to Brant's point. Not saying it wouldn't sell, but to go through the gymnastics of prying it out from the hands of those that own it, get it fixed up, get it prettied up, get that rule book, get it cleaned up. You know, it would require somebody just to love it a whole lot. So basically, I got to win the lottery, or, you know, somebody else that loves it that much has to win the lottery and have somebody have at it.
Well, I got to say, I think if GMT put that on their 500 in days, that thing's got 500. You're going to have people just, you know, like ourselves, nostalgic people. I think it would go pretty quick.
Well, I think that's true, whether it's GMT or Compass or anybody else. I you know, Worthington could do it. It would probably hit its pre-press number pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. I guess. So first of all, I do think it's kind of humorous, the Board Game Geek listing of it, 2 to 7 players. The playing time is listed as 120 to 12,000 minutes.
Yes. Yes. And
they're not wrong.
Not wrong. I was about to say, I'm looking, where is the lie?
Yeah. There.
And let's also be clear, and I hope nobody listening doubts my love of this game. Please, it's ugly.
Yes.
I mean, that map, ooh, doggy, is that ugly.
And yeah, that's one you would definitely want Mark Mahaffey to take a run at.
Yeah, yeah, and you'd want to go after the whole thing, really. Get me some new pieces, get me some new stuff.
Yep.
But, you know, but that's the whole point, isn't it? That's what we want.
Yep.
You know, use the new technology we have today and have somebody go through the rule set with a fine tooth comb and get it fixed up. No, I've got it. Go Big Shock for Tabletop Simulator. And, you know, I look at it and say, you know, one of these holidays, or, you know, now that one by one, we're falling forward into retirement before we die, you know, maybe get one last run at it. But it's that kind of game. But no, that's a very fine choice. And of course, if it were on GMT, I'd punch anybody that tried to get in front of line for me to buy it. I'll punch you.
You'd be punching a lot of people.
Yeah, fine. Not afraid.
Brian, I think you have truly encapsulated the spirit of this whole exercise here of that is a fine wargaming holiday wish. Somebody ought to remake Empires in Arms. And I don't think you're necessarily picky about who. You mentioned GMT a couple of times because they do good work. They're not the only ones out there that do good work. You just want this thing brought back with sort of the modern technology upgrade, sure, to the production, but still retaining the fun that you remember of the original game.
Compass is remaking every game ever made. So come on, let's get on, yes, the bandwagon.
Yes. Amen.
I will, however, insist that whatever cover gets put on whatever remake, it still has to show a pregnant Napoleon. Okay, Mike, do you have a wargaming wish, a wargaming holiday wish for us?
Well, now, is this for something for me or for the wargame community in general?
Pick one. We're going to look, we got a couple hours to fill here, right? We're going to come back around and you're going to get to make a few more wishes. So what's one for you then? Or one for the wargaming world?
So, you know, one for the wargaming world, and this will never happen, but it would be very nice to see, is something like, you know, how PC games have a good old game so they can go get old out-of-print games. If there was something like that for board games, whether it's a, you know, you could, all these games that we can't find anymore that we want to play, or we can find them, but we don't want to pay $500 for. You know,
like Empires in Arms.
Yes, but a place where we could go and maybe get print-and-play versions of these things, or maybe print on demand versions of these games that don't cost $500 for these games that are out of print.
So, I'm curious, Mike, what would be your top three?
My top three? Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I know, I'm on the spot.
It almost sounds like you're wanting more people to set their stuff up for Blue Panther so that Steve can just hit print and, you know, a boxed game spits out the other end of the giant Dr. Seuss machine that he's got there.
I'm just curious to know. I'm curious to know what you miss most.
I don't have a wish list anywhere that I can go back and look at where games I've tried to find and I can find them at outrageous prices or I just can't find them.
Okay.
I can't think of anything offhand though.
See, I am legitimately curious because I'm always fascinated by that. I'm always fascinated by the game that got away. It's weird. This goes back to something that I actually bought. I forget what it was that I bought for you, Brandt, all those years ago from Half Price Books. But
Featherstone book?
That was it. I was at Half Price Books and I saw the thing that I hate most in the world, which is a shelf of one of our brothers, because they're typically men, but it could be a woman. One of our brothers who has fallen and his survivors have no idea what to do with all his wargaming crap. And so they take it to Half Price Books and it gets sold in a big chunk. Right. And there it was. And I took a picture of it and I sent it to Brant. Brant wanted some stuff. And I bought a big bunch of it too. And I know I'm destined to have that happen to me too.
Well, I'll let you know. Half Price Books has caught on to
big time.
The price of games.
Oh, big time. Yeah. Yeah. And it didn't help the fact that before he quit because he was mad about their stupid COVID policy, you know, not caring too much about their employees, but I digress. They actually hired as their assistant manager the son of the guy who ran the greatest Napoleonic war game store in town, Napoleon's. And he was a good friend of mine since he was a kid. And he was there and he was trying to tell him, he said, guys, and I was like, dude, don't tell them. Because, and I'm sure it was more corporate too, but you know, my copy of Empires and Arms was mint in box, bought it at Half Price Books for $19.99.
Wow.
I got news for you. But, and so there's one part where I'm always curious, what's that game that got away? What is the game you didn't get because for me, it was always, the original detergent box version, and it's not detergent box, just the big white box of 30 Years War by SPI, that quad.
Yep.
I was a stone broke graduate student and I was in a bidding war with a guy at Gen Con at the auction 100 years ago. I had no money to spend. I mean, I was gambling rent and this SOB drove that game up to $80 and I stayed in and my wife looked at me like she was going to cut my throat. And it got away. It got away from me.
But yeah, see, that's what I mean, though. That's the types of games I'm talking about. You mentioned the quads, and yeah, that's...
And that is why I'm going to say it is one of the great, great gifts that Tabletop Simulator has given me. Because I'm sitting here poking at my Tabletop Simulator collection. Somebody has just uploaded the original SPI Leipzig. Somebody has just uploaded Red Star, White Star.
Let a 9-year-old play Red Star, White Star.
That sounds like the voice of experience.
There's a way to do this. There's a good idea. You know, have somebody, you know, I would pay for these things on Tabletop Simulator.
And you have led to my point. I think that if we could ever get over ourselves, and I respect copyrights. I do. They're important. I have friends that practice that area of law. So I'm not dismissing any of the effort and work. But some of these people that own these rights really got to get over themselves.
Well, keep in mind, too, at a certain point, the copyright will expire, which is why, you know, Mark Twain's books are all in the public domain at this point. Continue to throw Disney a bone keeps extending the length at which copyright continues to apply.
Yeah, but dude, I'm eligible for the Denny's senior menu. I ain't. Yes. I got clock is ticking.
I got you. I got
clock
you.
Is no, freaking ticking, and as a consequence, it's like, and now somebody has posted ASL, the original ASL Beyond Valor, and you know so. Yes, you're right. You should own a copy. You should get a copy. And if I can, I will. And in fact, I'm in a position I will spend more money than I should.
Is that going for a lot of money? Because I have my original one.
Beyond Valor, MIB? What stat? What kind of condition you got?
I don't know.
Is it punched?
No, it's not punched.
Okay, so if it's not punched, you probably have about a semester's worth of in-state tuition right there in that box.
I would say, and what edition, do you know?
The first. Vance squad leader. It's over here somewhere.
I think it dramatically varies depending on condition. It runs. I'm just looking at the marketplace here.
I've seen pictures. Brian's man cave is far more organized than my office. He just has a lot more stuff in it to have to go through to find things.
Well, I've actually started moving stuff to my garage because I'm running out of man cave stuff. I have repurchased every game that I grew up with.
You need a bigger man cave.
Yeah, it's bad. I got games laying on the floor. I got games everywhere.
To go back to your question to Mike about what are some of the games you would want reprinted through this, this hypothetical good old games, there's two I can think of off the top of my head that I think would have a mass rush for them, and one of them for which we have significant evidence of that. The other one, Ambush. I would love to get a hold of a copy of Ambush and the Ambush expansions.
Okay,
I would love to get that one back.
Yeah, and what I was going to say is I can tell you two examples of where I did end up paying astronomical prices for games. One was Battle Hymn, which, and I'll tell you this, Jim. I know it's a solitaire only game, but I'll tell you this, Jim. If you really want one of these games that's out of print, get me to buy it at a really high price because I will guarantee that they will reprint it because I heard that the Battle Hymn may be reprinted soon, and I'm like, damn it, I just bought that for more than I should have paid.
Well, I will tell, and here's the thing. Now, just here's the debate. What is absolutely crazy? I have, for what it's worth, I have the now I own everything Ambush. Okay, all of it. I even own the stupid head to head thing that they did, which I didn't realize wasn't Ambush. So I was super disappointed. But the tabletop simulator module of Ambush is glorious. Mm. I mean, it is really good. And I have long thought that a Saturday Night Fights will be taken up, or maybe like a Wednesday Night Warfare, with a group of guys from the forum running through an Ambush scenario or two.
Yeah. So Ambush is one that I think would definitely get...
But I agree. I agree. Yes.
...attention on the reprint, on that reprint on demand kind of service there that Mike was talking about. The other one for which we have several hundred thousand wasted dollars of evidence is Upfront.
I was going to say that.
Yeah. Well, and again,
he's going to hang up on us here in a minute.
that one makes me want to, as you know, that makes me want to break my mic. So, I will always be sad about that. To be very
wait, honest. What are you being sad about?
Okay, it was Kickstarted, right?
I did not know that. I knew you could buy it print on demand.
Yeah, before that happened, they licensed the rights to a thieving scumbag out of Texas.
Well, are we sure the rights were ever actually appropriate?
Well, there is a legitimate question as to whether or not said thieving scumbag ever really owned the rights. That's right. That was going to be one of the subjects of litigation if he would have had a you-know-what to, if he had a pot to you-know-what in. By the time the litigation actually hit.
Well, and if he hadn't fled the country.
Correct. Along the way,
Mike's laughing. We're being serious. The dude.
No, I'm laughing because I've heard this story before.
Yeah, no, it is. And I, because my father was still very much with us, and I always wanted to figure out a way to honor his service. And so I bought one of the things you could do is you could buy a personality card as a stretch goal in the game at a very high level. And they were going to put his name and his rank. And I sent an image of him when he was in the service.
Right.
And over to them. And I was super excited. And as anybody who has followed the event knows, as Brant said, the guy clearly, the lying scumbag may not have held the rights. We'll never know if he held the rights because he took about $300,000 and fled the country and went to Australia. And quite literally, and leaving us all in the lurch. It was sometime thereafter that Wargame Vault legitimately got the rights and has been putting out these conversions since. Now, I want to be also clear. I own Upfront, an original box that I bought at the Gen Con auction. I also own Banzai. I never did get the third expansion. But along the way, I can also say that the version on Tabletop Simulator has all the cards and the improved art.
And I will say that if you buy the print-on-demand version, you better have very, very, very good eyesight.
Oh, my God. Because, you know, I'm half an idiot. I bought that, too.
Yeah.
And it came back. I'm like, oh, are you kidding me? Well, not just that, though. You know, as you will know, if you ever played up front, you will know that it came with a ton of counters. Well, those counters came as pieces of cards that you had to cut out yourself.
Yes.
How much did we want to hump the memory of up front that much?
I wasn't going to mention Brant's brought it up.
I think where Mike was going with all of that is that, yeah, you could put stuff up there on print on demand. If I wanted to be an arts and crafts project, I would be a minis gamer. I want to open a box, punch counters, and play games. Stickering blocks is as far as I'm willing to go, and even that's pushing it most of the time.
Here.
So I don't want an arts and crafts project. I don't want to have to like ask my kids to participate in the arts and crafts project. I want to open a box, punch counters, and play game. And so that goes back to Mike's, I think where Mike's original sort of holiday wish here was going is, you know, dial up the game you want, hit go on the Dr. Seuss printing machine, and out the other end next to a Starbelly Sneech, you get a copy of Upfront. Intact, ready to play, no assembly required, punch some counters, shuffle cards, start playing a game. And Mike, to your point, I think that would be fantastic if we could figure out a way to, first of all, get all the rights to this, and then figure out a way to pre-program all of the machinery such that you remove as many humans in the loop as possible from map folding and box stuffing and whatever, that you hit go and out the other end, here's a finished game, throw it in the mail to somebody.
Yeah. And that's why it's a Christmas wish. We'll never see it.
Yeah. Well, we'll never see it. Our kids might. Their kids probably will.
That's true.
No, as Jim has pointed out, we're on that downhill slope. I'm not sure we're going to get to that point. So.
Well, you know, speaking of games that you have to assemble, in my quest to get every Alamo game ever made, I bought this one. And
all three?
It's surprising how many, you know, magazine ones there are. There's quite a few out there. But
I can imagine. I'm just kidding.
It came with a sheet that you had to cut the counters out of, but it also came with a separate cardboard that you had to, once you cut out the counter, you had to glue it to the cardboard that you cut. Oh, it's just a freaking nightmare. And I'm like, this game will never be played ever because there is no way I'm going to be gluing all this. It's just nuts.
As Armchair Dragoons continue the seventh season of Mentioned in Dispatches, we need to take a moment to thank those Patreon supporters who pledged at the regimental patron level. So a special thank you to Patrick Mullen, Hethwill Wargames, Steelgrave, Mike Quigley, Staggerwing, Robert, Joseph Knoll, Treb Curry, Kevin Bertram, and Patrick Garrity for their support of Armchair Dragoons and helping us bring you the best wargaming content on the web. You can join our Patreon supporters at patreon.com/armchairdragoons.
Okay, so Jim, give us one of your wargaming holiday wishes, something you would like to see, or perhaps a wish on behalf of a publisher or a designer or someone in the audience or whatever.
It can't be a demand to be a reprint of Upfront.
No, I'm very, actually, I was about to say something dumb. I will never again back up front. No, that's not true. I will, if they came out with a lovely new edition, I would.
GMT put it on P500, you'd pledge that and Mystery Wizard to get Mystery Wizard out of the way.
Maybe that's what I have to offer Volko. Wow. I will back freaking Mystery Wizard if you can get it out of the way. I've already clearly expressed my previous wish that they would please, GMT, please release Le Grand Battles, Commands and Colors, Napoleonics, Le Grand Battles. It's long past time. There are so many, many lovely, lovely scenarios promised there. But I'm going to go in a related move. I've got some others because I actually got some Christmas wishes already this year that I want to share in a bit when we get around to it. But I will say this. Give us somebody. And this is another knock at Hasbro because those doofuses own the rights. give us Epic Battle Cry. It exists. Market it. Some give the rights to GMT, give the rights even better, in my judgment, to Compass, and let them market a scenario set for Battle Cry. The 150th anniversary edition of Battle Cry is quite lovely. It certainly could use a retooling in my mind, but even if it doesn't, the trick, of course, is nobody except for Worthington wants to deal with toy soldiers anymore.
That's what I was about to say, is if you're going to reprint Battle Cry correctly, you're not going to get a war game publisher to do it. You're going to need a Days of Wonder, a Fantasy Flight, somebody that actually does minis.
Right. And I'd take blocks. You know that. I would happily take blocks because I ain't going
to
keep it. Because
you got somebody to sticker them.
Yeah, true. But, well, you had to sticker the minis in Battle Cry anyway.
That's true.
You had to stick the flags on there. And also on the dice, to Mike's earlier point. But, look, those scenarios all exist. Those rules all exist. Richard plays them every flip in Historicon. And if you come up to this guy, and he's a great guy, he's been to the booth at Origins and hung out, watched us run his games. If you come up to him, he's like, might want to publish it someday. I've got the rights. See,
you just proved my point again, because there's another one I bought recently for $80. I got the unpunched, I can't say punched because there were minis in there, the unsprued, the first version of Battle Cry. And, mm-hmm. It's one of those things I couldn't find, and I had to put down the money to get it. I'm glad I did. I like it. But
that's lovely.
Yeah, there's another example. But reprint it.
Yeah, get that sucker out there and get it, but then make darn sure you give us the Epic, because Commands of Colors is a great game, Memoir is a great game, but it sings when you can play the really big battles, and the rules are so light and so fun. I mean, my God, somebody asked me on Twitter, what game he should progress his daughter from, because she likes Stratego and wants to move to a more of a war game, and I said, Battle Cry is not much harder than Stratego.
Nope.
And allowing it as one of the classic introductory war games and getting it into a big experience, so it's got that wow factor with a big table and lots of minis and, charging and counter. Oh, yeah, it should happen. Let's give us Epic Battle Cry, please.
Well, you can buy two more copies and just set up your own table.
Oh, no, for the record, of course. Okay, I'm coming to where you live, and I'm slapping you. I have two copies, my friend.
Well, you need one more then.
No, you only need two. You only need two.
Epic, though.
Well, that way, yeah. But I've got two of the 100. I sold the classic Battle Cry that I had to a friend, and then I bought two copies of the 150th.
Wow.
Well, just I wasn't, the other one was going to look shabby in comparison. So what? I went out and I got two copies of the 100. No, I have enough Memoir stuff. I've told Richard this. I have enough Commands of Color stuff to play Epic in everything he has done except the Samurai and Red Alert. So, I've got the stuff, but I want official rules. I want official scenarios. He's got books of scenarios that he's drafted just for fun. And he's such a great designer. And I would love to stage and to play them. And I think it's a pity we can't.
I have a couple of holiday wishes I'm going to rattle off in fairly quick succession so we can get back around to chattering about your guys' wishes, because I think some of y'all's are a little better than mine anyway. Following up the earlier point that Mike had of games you would want to see reprinted through the Magic Game Reprintothon or whatever, I would love to get a hold of a copy of Divine Right, the old TSR one. That I've played it a bunch. I've never actually owned it. I would love to have my own copy of Divine Right. That one I would definitely want to make happen. I would love for some of the better war game designers out there to have wider recognition among the board game community in the large, rather than just be rock stars in our little niche. Jim, you've talked about our little cul-de-sac of wargaming. But wargaming, while in slightly different forms, is more widespread than I think a lot of the larger board game audience wants to give them credit for. Memoir 44 is a big hit across the spectrum of gaming, not just in our little corner cul-de-sac. Same thing with the Heroes of Normandy series of games. These things are hits beyond just the little niche of wargaming. I would love for somebody like David Thompson to have the same level of recognition as guy, you know, as some of, as a Jamie Stegmaier, for instance. David Thompson's a great designer. I would love for more people to know who he is. Folks like that. There are a bunch of other designers. A couple of them I can even pronounce their names correctly. I would love for Pete Bogdazarian to get back into the design game and to have a bigger name out there as a game designer. So, and I'm not just saying this because I'm friends with these guys. They're great designers. I don't know too many people that have many holes to poke in any of David's designs. I would love for him and others like that to get a bigger recognition out there. And to that end, one of the things that I would love to see, and it's something we've been working on for a couple of years, man, I would love to have a teaming crowd that is four people deep, not unlike Jim's Kickstarter, Kriegspiel that we had at Origins that one night where we had to kick staff members out of the game because we had so many walk-up people with generic tickets. I would love for the booth to be that hopping the entire weekend, not just on Kriegspiel night. So there's a couple of ones that I want to throw out there. If you guys got any reactions, feel free to make fun of me.
I think Dave, you know, this is all going to be relative. I think David gets a lot of recognition and entirely deservedly so. I think
it's primarily from the wargamers.
Look, I mean, Tom Vassell regularly cites him as the best wargaming designer going. You know, I listen to the dice.
How many other wargame designers do you think Tom Vassell can actually?
Well, of course, that's entirely beside the point. I mean, it is, I think in some respects, and I guess I didn't want to seem like I was damning David when I said this, okay, because I'm not. I think he deserves the place he's found. He is the convenient guy, along with Richard Borg, where non-wargamers go, see, we like wargames, we like this game and this game, we like Undaunted, and we like Commands and Colors Ancients.
Yeah.
Oh, those other games are stupid, you know, and...
You might get Quartermaster General thrown in, right? You might get
yes, absolutely, yeah. You'll get
in the same conversation.
You know, you'll get stuff like that. But you know, shoot, they blanch at Twilight Struggle.
Yeah, but
that's again, that's
Volko's a rock star in the wargaming world. How many people outside the wargaming world know who Volko is?
Correct. There's a better example. A better example of where that cutoff is, because I think David is getting solid recognition for, you know, game of the year. I mean, Undaunted is acknowledged as just a good game, you know, and he's definitely a leader in the conversation about what a war game is. I was listening to a podcast talking about Cole Worley's brilliant. I mean, you know, stone cold brilliant. Oh, my God. It makes me faint with happy John Company. It ain't no war game, but people think it is.
Not a war game.
I think people look at John Company and think because it's complex and it isn't exactly an economic, it's not a Euro. It's not a true Euro in the sense most people like it to be.
Like Shores of Tripoli.
You know, they don't like it. So no, I agree with you in principle. I think, and I've said this for years, I think it's chimerical. And like we said, these are wishes, right? These are wishes. So these are things we don't necessarily think are going to happen. But I, too, would like it if people would follow behind and kind of peek behind David, give him all the love, give him all the sales, but then peek behind him and see the Volkos and some of the other people that are out there designing great war games and give them credit, too, and realize, holy cow, this is actually not that complex. It certainly, you know, there's a whole lot of board games out there that people are playing without batting an eye that just because we don't wrap them up in candy coating – people assume they're too hard to play.
Yeah, Mark Simonich, you know, Lee Brimacombe Wood is a bit of an oddball in that whole conversation because the dude actually earns a living as a game producer because his day job is he's a video game producer for high-end video game studios for like big billion-dollar franchises who happens to do some cool wargaming stuff on the side. Folks play plenty of games that he's got a hand in. They just have no idea because nobody knows who the designers are on all those different console shooter games out there.
Right.
So he's a bit of an oddball in that. You're right. David Thompson's probably not the best example to use there. That Volko's probably the better example to pick and choose from. But I would love it. Brian Train is another one.
Yes.
Brian makes absolutely brilliant designs that really make you think about the underlying nature of the conflict, not just how do I win this game that I'm playing. And it would be fantastic to see more of Brian's work get out in front of, because most of Brian's stuff is not that complex in its execution. It is complex in the way you have to think about some of those problems, but it's not, the games aren't hard to play. They just really make you think about what you're trying to accomplish. And Brian's another name that I would love to see get bigger recognition. And so if I had my holiday, my wargaming holiday wish would be for wargame design. Now, I get that this means that means wargames break out of their niche as well. Obviously, we would all love for that to happen to a greater degree than it has. But more specifically, I would like to see a bunch of those designers really get their due as great game designers among people who claim to like great game designs, but then ignore all these, you know, really good designers over here doing war game stuff. So, so that is definitely one I've got. And Mike, when you get around to creating good old board games, GOBG, right? Then make sure Divine Right is somewhere in that production. Brian, coming back around to you, do you have something else you've thought of in the course of these conversations that there's another wargaming holiday wish you would like to see granted out there, either for yourself or for someone else, particular people, particular games, particular companies, whatever?
Well, I pretty much buy everything for myself because, you know, I know what I want. If I try to describe what I want to anybody else as a gift, they just give me a blank stare. So let me tell you some of the games that I just got recently. Okay. Have a little discussion on them. Absolute War Russian Front, 1941 to 45. Mind you, I haven't played any of these games yet. I bought them because they intrigued me. And that one intrigued me because I am, at this point in life, I don't want the rule struggle. And I'm reading how, you know, this is a friendly game, low complexity. I'm like, count me in, because I just don't want to do the rule struggle anymore. I peaked, what was it, by Mark Kerman, the Pacific one. I peaked there. Yes, I peaked there. And let me tell you, Mark Kerman is a god. There's no doubt in my mind. The guys, I just love his games. But from here on out, I am trying to stay away from the complex games. So that sounded like something right up my alley. The other game I got was Dread Circus. Now, this is a game about an evil carnival, and I've been in love with evil carnivals since I saw, what was it, Something Wicked This Way Comes on HBO when I was a little kid. So awesome. I didn't know anything about this game. I still don't, except it's an evil circus. So,
but aren't all circuses evil? I thought.
Brian, be honest. You've been obsessed with evil circuses since you tried to run away and join one.
What else do I got here? Oh, I posted this one, Role Player Adventures. And the biggest reason I bought this was because they have the old Dungeons & Dragons style modules, you know, as your actual adventures. Well, it looks like the old Dungeons & Dragons style modules. So yep. I saw that, and I'm like, oh, that looks beautiful. And so bought that. And what else? Oh, Mr. Cabbage Head's Garden. It's a solo card game. It uses old Victorian images of vegetables that used to kind of have human characteristics. And it's made by a guy in Pittsburgh. So I bought that one. That's pretty much it. Oh, and the latest Arkham Horror from Fantasy Flight, their latest modules, which, by the way, would make an excellent dungeon crawler if they just pasted on it, you know, made a few changes to the whole theme and, you know, maybe added some rules. But yeah, that's what I've gotten recently. And those are what I consider my Christmas gifts.
How many of those are still in shrink?
Hold on. Everyone except for Role Player Adventures, which okay. I did that unboxing with the pictures, which I didn't realize posting pictures on Armchair Dragoons was going to be such a challenge.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later. We'll help you out. We will lend a hand and we will help you out there a bit. I suspect somewhere in your Christmas wishes for yourself might be, you know, an extra opponent or two to play against, huh?
That would help. That would help. I literally have two sides of the brain and they both play each other when I do play these games.
Yeah, you see, for BB Mike, if we were gonna, you know, increase his opponent quotient, we'd just buy him more mirrors.
That's very true.
Mike will be in the Funhouse Hall of Mirrors in order to play multiplayer games solo.
There you go.
And I've tried, I think I've told you this before, I've tried to teach some family members. Well, here, I tried to teach my wife how to play chess, and that didn't go well. So,
for her or for you?
It wound up being for both of us. So, we'll leave it at that.
My son's new girlfriend came and joined us for part of Thanksgiving weekend. She was they were nuts enough to go out on Black Friday for a little while. Y'all have fun. I'm staying home. But on Saturday, they came over. We had my wife had the gumbo going. They came over to do some gumbo. They went out and did a sunset picnic and then came back to the house. And so she got her first indoctrination to a not basic of classic American game. We got out one of the Ticket to Rides and taught her how to play Ticket to Ride. And so that was kind of fun with the 11-year-old sitting around the table with us as well. That
I just bought Ticket to Ride Europe. They had it for $18 on Amazon.
That's not a bad deal. But the new girlfriend got indoctrinated into the Guillory tabletop gaming world there. We didn't throw her in the deep end. We didn't start with Seven Wonders or something crazy. We kept it pretty light. I was actually wanting to do one of the first journeys just to keep it a little easier for her even than that.
Seven Wonders is pretty light, though.
Well, Seven Wonders doesn't take much to learn the rules, but there's a lot to consider on each given turn, what you need to try to do moving forward.
Oh, absolutely.
That can overwhelm a rookie hobby gamer. Anybody that's used to Monopoly, Scrabble, and Sorry is going to get overwhelmed by Seven Wonders if that's the deep end you throw them into.
Yes, if they're trying to actually figure out strategy when they first start playing it, yeah, it'll be rough.
Jim, what's another holiday wargaming wish you might have there?
I'm gonna mention one that was granted, and therefore I suppose it's a little bit of a wish for their success.
Okay.
I think everybody who follows along here knows that I've long been close to John Tiller Software.
Yes.
I was a playtester on many games for them, particularly Napoleonic, but also some of the World War II stuff and the Renaissance stuff and a few of the others.
One of our very first live streams was you and Doug testing a Tiller game. I think
yes,
North Africa one.
It was. It was indeed. It was. We had gotten an early copy and we had gotten permission to show it out there. Absolutely. And so obviously when Dr. Tiller passed away earlier this year, there was a lot of us who were like, oh, shoot. Now, it's a little weird, too, because we really had developmentally, I mean, if you don't know, these games cover as Hex Encounter games, they have the feel of a Hex Encounter game, the entirety of the Napoleonic Wars at a pretty low level. You know, there are very, very few Napoleonic battles of any size that you cannot find in a Tiller game. Same can be said of their Panzer campaigns and all these other things. Well, along the way, a couple of years ago, a group of gentlemen calling themselves the Wargame Design Studio started working with Tiller to try to really bump a lot of his work, to try to take it to another level, not just do new games on new topics, but to really work on the user interface, which obviously had become dated, improve some of the graphics to the best of their ability, given limited resources, but also really do some insane resource to do some really insane research and improve the games overall. Well, they came out just a few weeks ago and announced that they had bought the rights to John Tiller's games, all of them. And this is Wargame Design Studio, which is at wargamedsdotcom, wargamedsdotcom. They sent everybody who was a licensed owner, including myself, of a Tiller game a free code to download the very latest updated version of all the games, just for nothing. You know, didn't have to ask for it. They just sent it to us. And they got some tweaks in there, some other stuff. And they are going to continue designing games going forward. It should be exciting to everyone who cares about war games, true war games, in the digital space that WDS is doing what they're doing. They are also the people who took the Tiller engine for Panzer campaigns and turned it into Panzer battles, which is, for a frame of reference, the same scale as Panzerleader and Panzerblitz. Those were the first time, those are the first ones where we went, oh, these guys are up to something. And then they put out the two World War One games that they've done, which are master classes. If you haven't played them and you're interested in the slightest in World War One, you're just missing out. I can't.
Suburbia 1914 was one of them. I don't remember the other title off the top of my head.
Yeah. I mean, it is. They are so ridiculously good, and you should. Well, one is just France 1914.
Okay.
And the hope we all have is that they're going to keep going through the entirety of the war at that level, where we can play literally the whole of World War One at the level of, I believe, the battalion, if memory serves, sitting here. I mean, that's insane.
I downloaded over 7 gigabytes worth of installers last week on this. Is it just under the hood type changes? Or are we talking graphical updates as well?
It depends on the product, but there are graphical updates across certain platforms. The Napoleonics. The other thing is they know we're a bunch of pains in the butt, and so they put some of the new graphics in there, but they also gave us the old one if we wanted to roll back. There are user interface changes. There are, and in like Napoleonics, there are some rule changes that you have to pay attention to, making official some things that among the playtesters were kind of controversial. Certainly, I was an objector and got outvoted in a series of angry discussions, but that's okay. I mean, the fact that they were open to that shows just how healthy this is. So certainly if you're looking at the Napoleonic games, you're going to be getting the latest rule set, the latest graphics, the latest map research. And now they have not, if you've been following their Panzer campaigns, they have been going through and issuing what they call their gold editions. Like, for example, you can see, I think most of them are already done now, that these are really nicely spruced up. All new map graphics, all new counter graphics, really top shelf stuff. I mean, it utterly mitigates the need for any tabletop treatments of these. I mean, and here's the biggest thing of all. John Tiller, before his passing, unlocked the deep, dark secret of multiplayer. You know, he did this a decade and a half, 2 decades ago? It is one of the most robust suites of multiplayer you will ever see in terms of the ability, like in a Napoleonic game, to have 4 different players, 6 different players, each one commanding a core. I have played the Midway game with friends of mine on a local LAN, where we had 8 players playing the Battle of Midway. We just took a whole weekend and played it. It's a screamingly good time. So they have taken this over. These are all available. And to top it all off, and this will still be going on by the time this airs, they are indeed, in honor of what Tiller always did at this time of year, at least for the past several years, there is now a Christmas sale with big discounts on all software.
That's cool.
Yeah, so, we've been tracking Wargame Design Studio since they started making their announcements, and they've shown up in the last couple of Tuesday Newsdays since they took over Tiller's stuff. Tiller's website redirects to them at this point, as you would expect, and that's just sort of where you're going to find them these days. So it is cool that there is somebody that cares that much that's taken over Tiller's vast and deep catalog of business. I am curious what's going to happen to the professional side of the things Tiller was working on. Some folks may not know he had a couple of different Air Force contracts for a long time that he was working on. I don't know if the Wargame Design Studio guys picked those up or if those went to someone else. But you're right. As you're looking for groggy versions of computer games that are essentially trying to recreate the Hex Encounter feel on digits, that's what Tiller did. And that's what the Wargame Design Studio guys seem committed to continuing.
Hey, Brant, let me selfishly ask a question of Jim here that he might know the answer to. Back in the late 90s, there was a Gettysburg game and a war game. I mean, war game. Gettysburg and what else was it? Waterloo game that were put out on PC. And I think they might have their lineage with the Tiller games. I'm not sure. But they had excellent maps. The graphics were excellent. For the life of me, I can't remember what the hell the publishing company was.
Are they UMS scenarios?
Are you thinking of the Talonsoft games?
Yes, that is it.
Yeah, those are Tiller games. Those are Tiller games. And You're thinking of Battleground Waterloo, Battleground Gettysburg, Battleground Bulge, which we're still, which by the way, in long lines of genetics, still have their seed in these games. They're the same basic premise. Tiller just evolved them over the years. The example I always give, the Battleground games, it was 25 men per casualty point. Right. Well, Tiller then changed that to one man per casualty point at some point. If you want to play those are still available from Matrix Games.
Oh.
Yeah, you can go to Matrix Games and get the certainly the Napoleonic pack is there complete, including the never exceeded. I'm going to have another wish. This is going to come with another wish. And I'm going to tell you something.
It's the point of the show, dude. Don't apologize for it. That's what we're doing here.
This is one of those things that absolutely 100% should have happened. And the fact that it hasn't blows my mind. John Tiller wrote a game called, and it was in the Napoleonic series, Age of Sail. And it's a real-time Age of Sail game. It has never been bettered. Now, graphically, it's a bunch of sprites wobbling around on a screen.
Yep.
Musically, it's got great music. It's inspirational, funny, silly stuff. But in terms of gameplay, multiplayer gameplay, I have played Trafalgar against my wife and against my son using the system. No other game system allows me to do that. How is that even possible?
No one else has cared enough to try to do any better?
I guess not. But we've had Age of Sail games left and right. You know, that have come out. That's the thing. Okay, and so just for the record, Battleground Civil War is also available. It is currently, I imagine, because of the sale on deep discount, you can get right now with all those pretty pictures. The deal was, I think it was Jim Rose. Jim Rose worked with another guy to create what became known as Talonsoft. And they put out a series of these games, and they worked with Tiller to create these games. They paid professional artists to draw their hex maps.
Well, that's what I was going to bring up, was how well the maps, how well they were done compared to the Tiller games that came just after this.
Absolutely. And that's because they just lost that budget. When Talonsoft folded, they had to go. And always, if you play the Battleground games, which, by the way, you can get Borodino, Waterloo, is it Age of Sail, Prelude to Waterloo. Yeah, you get Napoleon in Russia, Prelude to Waterloo, Waterloo, and Age of Sail for $7.
Oh.
So that, I apologize. Here I see a different price. $9.90, $10. I mean, that's a freaking stocking stuffer, folks. You know, and they're still amazing games. I would play them today. I don't like the mechanisms as much. I think the more evolved mechanisms are better. But Brian, your point's absolutely right. They looked a lot better. They had lovely period music. They bought music. They even, now they've taken these out of the games. They even popped in little videos, little AVIs of reenactors at certain key points in the battle. Like when you would shoot, you would sometimes get a quick 10-second video of a bunch of reenactors shooting. But it's the same game. It's well worth purchasing, and those are still available for you. I don't know about the Civil War ones, but I do have the Napoleonic ones. Shoot, I've still got the CDs for the Talonsoft ones.
Well, the bad thing about these was the AI. You had to play an opponent. The AI was just a placeholder.
It was to teach you the system. That's it.
Yeah.
So Jim, I'm going to ask the question. Go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say that the games you're describing sound like, I remember an old game called Civil War Generals that had like the little pictures would pop up and play during the game and kind of like Tiller games, actually. Is that what's on Matrix?
No, this is a different, although Matrix does have Civil War Generals. I'm pretty sure they still do. They offer to sell it to me every 2 seconds. That is an old Sierra game.
Yes.
Civil War Generals 2 was actually a wonderful, wonderful game.
Yes.
And it's, to my knowledge, can I get that on Steam still? Because I know you can get the Napoleon, the Talonsoft game where Hex ultimately, and it's funny, the 2D map was always in these games. You just had to zoom out to get to it.
Yeah.
And so these were the prettier maps were just loaded in. they were always hex and counter in their intention, no matter, you know, even though I think Talonsoft tried to say, hey, we'll lure some people in by throwing some cooler art on the front. And it was cool. People did like it. But that is different from Civil War General.
Jim, I'm going to ask a question. I promise I'm not trying to pick a fight, but
he's going to.
Has nobody improved on those tiller games like that Age of Sail game because it's just too hard to do, or because nobody's just really cared enough to try?
Well, a number of people did try. There was actually an Age of Sail 2 and an Age of Sail 3. Okay. The thing was, they shoved themselves into the 3D space because they felt they needed that graphic oomph. And then they lost sight of who they were supposed to be. They started to become pirate games. And they said, yeah, you could be a pirate. And along the way, you could be Horatio Nelson and fight the Battle of the Nile. You know, you could, well, they tried to have their marketing cake and eat it too. They never quite got there. I have asked on more than one occasion. I was a playtester for two of the naval games that you can get from Tiller, which, by the way, are now from War Game Design Studio, which I strongly recommend. I think Tsushima Straits is amazing. Midway is amazing. They're incredible fun, despite the simplicity of their graphics. But I've asked, why can't we do Age of Sail? We've got all the technology. And the concern has consistently been people with Age of Sail want the pretty. You know, they want the billowing sail and the roar of the guns and the flame and the smoke and all this other stuff. And there just isn't the appeal. And I'm like,
Without all the pretty stuff, you're back to rum, sodomy, and the lash.
Right. It lacks that je ne sais quoi. Yeah.
There's a limit here to the attractiveness without all the pretty bits in there.
Yeah, and I'm like, I don't know who you think you're marketing to. I mean, you're selling a game, for God's sake, and I'm not criticizing. I love that you do it. You've got a game called Campaign Scheldt, you know, the gold edition. What does that look like marketing wise? You know, Scheldt 44. Okay, well, all seven people that want this game raise their hands, and it's glorious. I love it. I bought the darn thing. Of course I did. But the idea that is somehow more marketable than a game about the Age of Sail, that strikes me as goofy.
Mike, what's another wish you've got for your wargaming holiday wishes out there? Gaming holiday wishes. If you want to expand the pool slightly there, you're welcome to do that.
Since we're well over an hour, I'll try to throw out something that shouldn't generate as much conversation as those last two.
Can pause and come back to the show later. It's fine.
I can't pause. It's late. so one thing I'm still looking for and will never find is a World War II Pacific naval game that has ships represented much like Starfleet Battles did with SSDs. I want to see an SSD for every single ship, and I want it to be, you know, rules light, rules medium, and I want to have a repair mechanic to go with those SSDs.
Have you looked into the Pacific War one from Lock and Load?
I've looked high and low. It does not exist. Not what I'm describing.
Okay. I was just throwing it out there.
I thought of you, Mike, because I know of your love of this, of the PTO, and so you'll have to be my guide. Sam Mustafa, he of Blucher, he of LaSalle 2, his next game is a Pacific naval game.
There goes some more money out the window.
And so is it a Napoleonic Pacific naval game?
No, it is not. It is World War II. And it's the really interesting thing. It is diceless. It is entirely card-based.
Wow.
That is interesting.
But it is a miniatures game. And look, you know, I don't like everything Sam has designed. I ultimately chose not to like Rommel. That was where I wound up. I tried it. But if Sam designs a game, I'm going to check it out. That's a promise, because he's special and he's a great designer, and you learn every time from him. So I'm very curious to know how close something like that might get to what you're looking for.
Well, I might have to be a guest player on Saturday Night Fights if you run that one.
Absolutely.
That would be very interesting.
Can't hurt. All right. So My other wargaming holiday wish, again, this is going to be a little Dragoon centric here. We had started some plans on this back before the plague decided to ravage the planet. And I'm hoping that we can, you know, finally clear the air literally enough that we can get around to pulling this off at some point. We had some plans fairly well advanced for an Armchair Dragoons gathering that was not quite going to be a game convention, but was going to be a weekend of just us getting together to game with us. Whether we built it around a game convention or not, the whole point wasn't to have our staff being the staff of this thing, you know, taking tickets at the door and teaching people games. It was going to be us sitting around drinking scotch and playing games and just hanging out. Because whenever we actually get everybody together, Jim and Mike have both been a part of this, we're working, right? We have the family reunion at Origins, and the first night we're there, it's, you know, group hugs and, you know, have a toast and whatever, and we're starting to set up for the next day. But then for the next 3.5-4 days, we're working, and then we all pack up and go home. And so we never get a chance to just sit around and just play games with ourselves and just have some Dragoon time, just being the Dragoons hanging out together. And it would be nice to actually be able to pull that off sometime over the, you know, by the end of 2022, it would be cool for us to actually have what was originally conceived as the Dragoons Assembly with a dozen or more of us all together, take over a hotel conference room for a weekend or whatever, and just sit there and play games all weekend. I don't think I'd have to twist many arms to get people on board with the concept. The challenge, as with every single gaming arrangement anyone has tried to make in the history of ever, is trying to find a weekend when we could actually all get together and do this. I have a feeling it'll be 2026. Not because of the plague, but because that's the next free gap that we could all agree on the same weekend.
And I was going to say, I'm free all year that year, so.
Yeah.
Well, it's, you know, but that's, you know, it's, I it's funny, I've been thinking a lot about the way the world is changing and, you know, the way that things are, you know, we hoped that the world would be back to full normal by now, right?
Yes.
And it is not. I mean, let's face it, it just isn't. And so the consequence of that is we're all a little bit stuck in terms of trying to figure out what our next step is. I was thinking about that just today. I mean, I had this idea in my head that for sure, no fail, I'm going to Historicon this year.
I'm not sure you're as stuck as you're pretending to be, given how many games you're playing literally 3 nights a week with everybody from literally around the country.
I am addressing in fairness, and I didn't bring this up, but since you did, I feel at liberty. To me, I filled so much of that space, but I was addressing the question of what do you do with in-person stuff?
Yeah.
No, I am incredibly blessed because of Tabletop Simulator, I'm able to get together with, I don't know, what is our cast out to now? Maybe 25 people, almost 30 people, depending on the weekend. And
players,
we play
in viewers.
Both. But I'm talking about players. No, I mean, the channels, you know, my channel is nearly to 900 people. You know, that there seems to be a limited, although present, appetite to watch a bunch of yabos sit around and play games.
It's an American treasure.
It is. I thank you for that. Yes. No, that's, you know, it amazes me, and it's something for which I continue to be grateful, if somewhat mystified. I never doubted that I would never be a marketer because I suck at it at all levels, but it never ceases to amaze me what people like and what they don't. You know, what games make people go on fire and don't. But all the way back to your initial point, I was just convinced that I was going to Historicon this year. And it is evident that while there was incredible passion and interest in going to Historicon and being, you know, it's just down. And I don't want to go here yet, but I don't know if you've noticed what's been going on with every other gaming convention, whether it be Origins or Gen Con or Essen Spiel or any of these others. They're all down. And there are some companies that are starting to seriously say, are we better off there and why?
Well,
I mean, when you have a company like Asmodee that almost completely withdraws from convention space, it's a big deal. When Paizo goes nowhere. It's a big deal.
Well, in some of those cases, people were going nowhere, not because they didn't want to be a part of the game conventions, but because they had people that legitimately couldn't travel for whatever reason.
Yeah.
As Gary pointed out in his post Origins show, and we talked about with Gary and Kevin on our Origins wrap up podcast, which was kind of a weird thing to do, right? Because usually by the time the podcast rolls around, we're 3 months past Origins, but not so this year. Gary has pointed out that you need to draw exactly zero conclusions from what happened with this year's Origins, not only because of the plague, but because October's a really crappy time to be trying to get a whole bunch of people traveling to a big game convention for a long weekend. There's just too much other stuff going on. Jim, that's what took you out of the running for being able to. It wasn't that you didn't have the time off or wouldn't be willing to go. You literally could not leave work in October the way you could in June. And so how many other people had that same circumstance come up? How many folks couldn't travel because they couldn't bring the kids with them because the kids are back in school at that point? How many teachers did we lose because they're back in school and couldn't be there at that point? There was just so many things that we couldn't do because of October that, yeah, Origins attendance was in the tank compared to most other Origins. It felt like somebody threw Origins in a dryer on high and left it on too long. But it still had a pretty good feel for it, even though it was much smaller than normal. How much of that is the plague? How much of that is people going, you know, we just don't need to sink the money into this? How much of that is, you know, we don't have the money to sink into this? And how much of that was, well, crap, if I'm playing games at Origins, who's getting the kids to school? So,
well, you know, a lot of it was when people found out that neither Jim or I were going to be there, then they just lost interest.
That's right.
I'm not gonna rule that out. I refuse to rule that out because, look, Jim will tell you because, and Mike, you've seen it enough years now as well. Although Jim was one of the ones that way back when would show up at the Origins War College specifically for the events. The not having the CPXs this year hurt. We have people that build their schedule around those CPXs. They find out when we're doing those big games. They put those on their schedule and they figure out what else they can do around that. We didn't have those this year. We didn't have the Kriegspiels this year. We didn't have a lot of stuff we normally did. Back to the original point of the wish, I want us to be able to get a bunch of the Dragoons together so that we're not just disembodied voices on a podcast with each other, that we're not just sort of Discord happy hour with, you know, or making snarky comments in the chat on Jim's Saturday Night Fights videos, that we are, or that we're all crashing Gary's live streams, that we actually all get together and just us hang out and play games for a weekend somewhere. I think that would be a ton of fun. I would love for it to happen. I'm a realist enough to know that as much as I want it to happen in 2022, whatever weekend I pick, we're going to lose half the people, right? That's just how it works, isn't it?
Well, it's also, you know, it's location, it's other plans. You know, you talk about my wishes for my family this year. We're getting out of Dodge. We haven't had a vacation in 3 years. And
you're not going to Wally World, are you?
No. Why do you think I'm so bitter about this Napoleon exhibit being in Paris now? Because I'm going to be there and it's not going to be, so.
we are approaching, we're over an hour and 20 now. Again, once I start editing down, we'll get closer to it. We say enough that I try to edit it out that, you know, we'll save 20 minutes just in So Brian, take us home. Give us some parting thoughts on the wargaming holiday wishes, or what your holiday plans are in the gaming space. What is it something that you're looking forward to in the new year? Give us a good, positive, uplifting parting thought here.
Okay, three things I'm looking forward to. Mostly PC wargame related. Gunner Heat PC, a tank simulator being done by ex-tankers, I believe. Looks fantastic. There's a great demo to download right now. It is so accurate. I was having flashbacks to M1 Abrams gunnery back when I was in the Army.
Isn't this just UCOFT?
It sure as hell seems like it. But better graphics than UCOFT. So,
well, that's a low bar to clear.
Well, that's true. But, you know, I mean, everything from just dumping your lead while you're shooting, just stuff like that. It's got it, you know. So I was pretty impressed with what they've done so far. The also coming up is Flashpoint Campaigns, Southern Storm.
Says you.
So I'm
looking, kidding, Snyder. I'm kidding.
I'm looking forward to that. Just, I hope they fix. I don't know if you guys have played the other Flashpoint campaign games.
It was obligatory. You can't be a Dragoon if you don't hang out with those losers.
Dude, that's what we use for the CPXs. That's what
I was going to say. If you don't, if you go to Origins, you're required to play it at Origins.
Yeah, it's
10 years. No,
and to be crystal clear to everybody listening who doesn't get the in joke, I love those guys so much. They're the best. And if you're not playing Flashpoint, you're something of an idiot. Go on.
Well, I did have a problem with the older Flashpoints. Basically, like, my M1 is shooting at a Jeep, you know, 10 hexes away, while there's 5 T-80s right in front of them.
Okay, let me tell you a story about how I got a nickname.
I was about to say, you just need to call in Jim to take out the...
Yeah, let me tell you a story. One of my first CPXs, I'm with these boys. And I'm playing now, mind you. And I'm having a blast. I love that. And Brent's right. Not having CPXs is a big deal down there. And I'm playing aviation, okay? And I'm playing the Russians. And I got me a couple of flights of Kiwas that are going to come looking for these boys. And I am way out, knees in the breeze, looking for these advanced, you know, basically, it turns out, we find out later, basically the entire American army is barreling down on us. But what do we know? And I got these guys, I don't know the doctrine, way too far forward, way too far forward. It's like kind of having your skirmishers behind enemy lines in Napoleonics. And the next thing I know, Jim,
technique. I mean,
it's an approach. It's not a good one, but it's an approach. And all of a sudden, Jim Snyder, friend, you know, armchair dragoon of the first rank, and you know, and a good dude, is just watching the screen, laughing his head off. And I'm going, "What are you laughing at?" He goes, "Nothing." And I give the second order, and I pass it on through ops, and he's still laughing and laughing. And finally he goes, "Hey, Jeep killer, get over here." And I go walking over. And sure enough, these Kiwas are popping and shooting everything that's coming at them. Now, they're hitting the Humvees, okay? And they're doing damage to them, but they're firing at tanks. They're firing at armor, and they're just getting grease spotted. And I'm going, "When were you going to tell me this?" He goes, "In the next OODA loop." Why? And so I got the name Jeep Killer Actual.
Yes.
Which you will note is still my sig on the Armchair Dragoons forums. So I have deep and abiding affection for the targeting proclivities of vehicles, etc. in Flashpoint. Thank you very much.
If you really want to get Jim all worked up, ask him when the previously announced Mideast expansion for Flashpoint campaigns is coming out.
Oh no!
That's been on. They threw it out as sort of a passing side comment in an interview we did with them right after they signed their deal with the Distal over in the UK. And they were talking about, yeah, you know, we might get around to this or this other thing, you know, campaigns on the moon or whatever. I don't remember everything they mentioned. We've talked about a Mideast expansion. Whoa, stop the presses. Flashpoint Campaigns announces a Mideast expansion. And Jim was backpedaling faster than an NFL cornerback.
Well, they talked about that like in 2013, didn't they?
Oh, they've mentioned it off and on over the years. But as soon as somebody said, "Hey, wait a minute. These guys are announcing Flashpoint campaigns Middle East." Jim immediately shut that down as fast as he could. And we've been awesome. Trying to restart that rumor mill for like 2.5 years now.
Awesome.
One last thing. Grand Tactician, the Civil War game. Ooh. On the computer. These people are shooting for the moon here with this game. And they've succeeded more than I expected they would. It's pretty decent. AI could still use some work, but anyway, they're replacing the sprite graphics of the troops with 3D graphics, which will be a big upgrade. Hopefully it works out, but looking forward to that.
Any sense that they're even going to try multiplayer?
No, I can't.
Any sense that they're going to try, or they've emphatically said they are not trying?
You know what? It might actually be on their roadmap. It's one of those games I can't even see how you would play, besides playing the battles in multiplayer. I'm not sure how you would play the campaign itself in multiplayer, because it's almost like an Europa Universalist type, you know, real time thing going on. So I'm not exactly sure how that would be done. I'm sure it could be.
You mean like the way that Europa Universalis does multiplayer?
Yes, which just isn't saying. Well. That's not necessarily a great way to do it.
Totally separate conversation. But I think March of Eagles is one of the best Napoleonic games ever done. But there.
Well, hold that thought for next season, because we still got to come up with, you know, an entire season's worth.
The March of Eagles episode. Yeah, I find that unlikely, but you do you.
I was thinking, you know, we could pick a Napoleonic topic and let you pontificate for an hour, and then
that'll draw them in their dozen.
Well, let me ask you this, Jim. Do you like it because there's so lack of quality when it comes to strategic Napoleonic games on the PC?
Well, no. Here's the crazy part. March of Eagles does the one thing I wish the rest of Europa Universalis would do: chuck most of everything over the side except operational military planning.
Right.
It chucks all the other stuff. Look, the first time I played EU2 101 years ago, I went, this game has a freaking inflation module. And as I was at that time a PhD candidate in 16th century England, I was like, get out of here.
Well, so let's be clear here, because the phrasing was a little off there. You were a PhD candidate studying 16th century England. You were not in 16th century England as a PhD candidate.
I know you're
a little on the older side, but I don't think you're that far ahead of the rest of us.
I'm not contemporary with Queen Elizabeth I, correct? No, I just think I was, because Boyer's got me chasing all over the place. I'm downloading the demo now for... I had not seen this GHPC. I have now, and I am downloading it. Does the demo have multiplayer?
No. It's just basically a demo of taking out the tanks for a spin.
Okay, because the game itself promises multiplayer co-op, which is super cool.
Mike, are you having flashbacks to a bunch of us on a call and suddenly everybody starts
buying games? I was
just
thinking the same thing. How much is going to be spent between now and
the... Well, the reason I was asking about the Napoleonic game was that nobody else seemed to like it. So I was a little...
March of Eagles? No, yeah. March of Eagles actually has done better, I think, in retrospect. I think it's gotten more respect in the rearview mirror. And then it's particularly gotten respect because of the multiplayer.
And one of the big... it's good to see that it's a leaner version of EU, because one of my biggest problems with the EU franchise is just adding more mechanics constantly. Right. With every update, not necessarily for the better. The AI doesn't know how to use the new mechanics, let alone the player has to learn the new mechanics and how they work.
No, so that's exactly right. I mean, EU4, there are any number of people who claim to understand EU4, and I look at them and I go, no, you don't. No, you don't. you don't.
Well, I'm pretty good at understanding most of it, but there are things that it's like, why did you add this? I mean, what is the point? It just doesn't make sense to me. It's just a game mechanic that you added that doesn't bring actually anything to the game itself. So.
Agree.
All right, BB Mike, parting shots here, man.
I think parting shots. Let's see. I'm looking forward to getting my pre-orders from 2 years ago finally coming here. That'll be nice. It would be nice to see maybe some new publishers come around, or maybe see some new mechanics in board gaming. And I don't mean blocks. We're done with blocks, people. Let's let the blocks go already. And maybe we'll see an award show for war games at some point. That would be nice.
Mike wants spheres. Mike wants wargaming spheres instead of blocks.
No, I don't get the blocks. It's you've taken a counter, you made it three dimensional and put less information on it. I mean, I don't
get it. Here.
I do not get it.
It's an attempt at Fog of War. And so the idea of less information isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Except that none of the Chain of Command game or Commands and Colors games have Fog of War.
And well, I was going to say, yes, that's my point.
But no, there is no good argument for the blocks.
Yeah.
They're
cheaper to manufacture than the minis.
Okay. But then to Mike's point, do lovely, lovely counters.
Yes. Big counters. Do 1-inch counters. Yeah.
Yeah. Do bigger than that. Make them fill the hole. I don't know, you know. Or, you know, shoot, put a big counter on there and put a little block that you mark casualties on. I don't know.
Or damn it, do a cube and use all six sides for information.
There you go. That'll work. Because there are other ways to do it.
Steps, you know, like 1 through 6, and sort of rotate it as you need to count it down.
Yeah. No, no, no. It's clear to me, and this is, it's weird because you've all seen the picture. Well, I don't know if you have. I shouldn't assume that. But I've many times posted the picture of my tackle box that I've got filled. I've managed to fit into one tackle box all my Napoleonic stuff for CNC. I've got all of it, right? And it sorts out. But it was after I did that and I started playing it on Tabletop Simulator that I said, wait a minute, why aren't these counters?
Yeah.
Exactly. There's not a good, because don't tell me they're better looking than counters, because they're not. Counters are lovely. You can do art on counters, and the art in, and I'm not, I sound like I'm being so disrespectful because I can't draw a lick, but don't tell me the art in Chain of Command or Commands and Colors Napoleonics is good. It isn't. It isn't. No, I agree. Let's get rid of them.
Well, what's the game I have from Worthington that's a Napoleonic Command and Conquers, but it has plastic pieces?
No, that's their 100 Days system. Yeah,
yes,
it's not card driven. It's actually the old fashioned. It's got an initiative roll system.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's ultra light. It's actually even lighter than I keep saying that. It's even lighter than Commands and Colors Napoleonics.
Okay.
I've got the whole thing. It's I don't hate it. But I would always prefer Commands and Colors.
I mean, it's like, look at Horse and Musket. Does it need blocks? No, it does not need blocks.
No,
it does just fine with counters.
No, and instead, Hollenspiel has decided to make the counters lovely and the terrain lovely.
Yes.
You know, they decided to go for a unified aesthetic, especially when your game is a toolbox, right? In Commands and Colors, it's not hussars or chevaux légers or anything. It's light infantry or light cavalry. You know, it's not this kind of skirmisher or that. It's light infantry. So since you're doing that anyway, since you're essentially proxying these guys, just give me a nice counter. Yeah.
Three-dimensional counter. We don't want meeples with information on them.
That don't. Oh, man, you are making such a great point. Stop trying to compete in that space. You can't.
Exactly.
We don't care. We don't care.
All right. Next product idea, Dragoons Meeples.
No, I mean, my dude, Glenn Frank Drover in
Purple Prussians.
Well, no, that's where I'm going. You know, he created the Napoleonic worker placement game. I didn't know I wanted, which I enjoy. I love it. And he was, you know, gracious enough to share a copy with me. And as you say, the Prussians are purple. Which I will never let him live down. He's like, well, what color should I make him? I said, I don't know, black.
You want to talk about a total 180 during development, from what the game was going to be when you kickstarted it to what it wound up being.
Oh my god. Yes.
If he made those black, he would be plagiarizing all those other war games.
Is that it? But no, I don't know if everybody's catching what Brian's saying, but you're absolutely right. He had represented this game as being something radically different.
Well, the computer games that he made.
Yeah, so, but no, but it's a great game. I like it a lot. But again, it's the...
it's the Hanseatic Wheat Orgy of Napoleonics.
Yeah, it is. That's exactly what it is. It's the Hanseatic... And again, you know, Glenn has designed 101 games. He's officially now in the... recreational game space. You know, I would tell if anybody ever, and I think I know where my copy is sitting. It's sitting. If anybody ever wanted to sit down and play that with me, I'd do it in a minute. But you know, it is very funny to me that you're looking at a game where you had these meeples and the color that came to mind, and it's Victory and Glory Napoleon we're talking about. I should have said the color that came to mind for the Prussians was purple. It's, as I say, it is the minute you're done playing it, you will go, holy crap, it's a worker placement game. And I will say, yes, it is. And that's okay.
And then stop you from playing it.
With, by the way, a gorgeous board that he swiped from Napoleon in Europe that is worthy of framing and is probably four times bigger than it needed to be.
So right, his computer versions wound up being the game that he originally intended it for it to be,
correct.
I believe.
Correct. Remember, and he was always supposed to publish a set of, he has the largest collection of 28 millimeter Napoleonics based for his iteration of Commands and Colors that I've ever seen. He keeps switching
anymore. He had sold them.
He sold them. Yeah. You know why? So he could buy 15s.
And he's probably selling those to buy 12s.
Right. Shut it. You will shut it. Will you? You know, it's funny. I got a viewer criticizing me. In fact, unsubscribe from my channel. And y'all won't stop poking me on this subject. I stopped. I'm good. I'm virtuous. And when whoever complained and noticed, Brandt started it. But no, he was supposed to put out a set of tactical rules to resolve the battles for victory and glory, and that never happened. I think, like a lot of other people of genius, and I think Glenn is, I want to say that very clearly, in addition to being a good friend, you know, he has like 30 different games going on in his head at any given time.
He's a bit of a nut job.
Mm-hmm.
He's a really nice nut job.
He is. No, he's a real gentleman. And you know, to give an idea of how small the world is, my sister-in-law and her husband own a coffee shop in the same town where he lives, and they met and started talking about me and didn't realize they were talking about me until the conversation continued. You know, he was talking about this guy he knew in Milwaukee, and she was talking about this crazy guy her sister was married to.
And the Venn diagram happened to be a circle.
Exactly. And they went, wait a minute, you talking about Jim? And like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Something that I would love to see continue as a final sort of parting holiday wish here. There's a bit of a setup to all of this. I want to take you guys back to 2005, the summer of 2005.
Oh my God. Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Sweet Jeebus.
Yes. Those prehistoric days of a young game designer who has no clue what the hell he's doing, but he's got a game and he thinks it's kind of fun and he's going to take it to Origins. He's going to conquer the world with this thing, and he ends up losing money because he sells like 18 copies of it. But it does pick up a little bit of recognition here and there, and it actually shows up as a cover story in Paper Wars magazine, which is kind of cool. Get some coverage in the then still in print Armchair General magazine, which is kind of cool. And that allows him to double his sales and still not quite hit 50 units sold. But still, it's getting some attention. It's moving a little bit. And then here comes the totally off the wall, out of left field one, National Defense Magazine. Yes, a trade publication for the United States Department of Defense gives him a call and says, hey, we heard about this new game you designed. We know you're an actual like serving National Guard officer and that you sort of built on some of your own experiences for this thing. Tell us about this thing. And lo and behold, in December of 2005, National Defense Magazine publishes an article specifically around training and simulations. And wouldn't you know it, there's an actual in-print national article about this bonehead from the National Guard who designed a low-level war game. And wow, this could actually be used for doing some no-kidding real training for military folks out there, not unlike how it was used when he first created it with a couple of the dudes from his National Guard unit when they were kind of sitting around bored one drill weekend. You know, stop me if you've ever sat around bored at a drill weekend. And so here we actually get the Department of Defense trade magazine world out there recognizing that there are civilian influenced and civilian published tabletop games that could be used specifically for whatever kind of training. In this case, so pretty low level stuff. This isn't highfalutin like Title 10 wargaming at the Naval War College or defense policy decision making of defense plans for the next 20 years. This is, let's put a board game in front of troops and actually push counters around and learn a little bit about tactics. And holy cow, this was happening in 2005. And my God, wouldn't you know what's happening now in 2020 and 2021 and 2022? Sebastian Bay's shipping out Fleet Marine Force as fast as he can make them. And they're flying out the door. And look, we've all heard about like Gulf Strike getting bought by everybody right before Gulf One happened because the Pentagon realized they had no idea what was actually on the ground out there, and the civilian war gamers did. But how often did we actually push those war games down as training tools down to the individual unit level, and we had E5s and E6s and O1s and O2s playing these things? We tried this back in 05 and tried to get a little bit of a push, and it didn't really go anywhere. And now, again, Sebastian can't move Fleet Marine Force fast enough. Assassin's Mace is flying around. Sterrett's got an entire curriculum built around, hey, let's run off with great ideas from civilian wargame designers and incorporate them into military training tools. These things are flying all over the place. 17 years later, it's about damn time. is the key point I want to make here. It's about damn time that the military caught on to the fact that you don't need a bunch of contractors and a $10 million deal to run a giant network computer sim with 180 people flying out to Fort Leavenworth to go play a game for a week for some training purposes, when you can put a bunch of board games in front of dudes and let them work on stuff themselves for a weekend somewhere during some downtime one afternoon when you can't go to the range because it's raining like hell. And it's nice that we finally caught up to all of this. I just wish we'd figured it out 17 years ago, when I could have sold a couple extra copies of my damn Warfighter game, when I was trying to actually make these things move. And again, like I'm never going to pretend to have been some sort of business savant. There's a reason Bayonet Games doesn't really do anything anymore. It's because I was bad at it. But I kind of was a little ahead of the curve on this concept here based on what's happening today. I just was kind of way ahead.
Well, didn't you have specifically a Ukraine game?
So that was a separate design a little later. That was not part of the Warfighter series. And so the Ukraine game, while it was eerily predictive of a bunch of things that have actually happened, one, that one never actually got into print because I never could afford to get it printed the way I really wanted to. But two, that operates at kind of a higher level. That's battalion level counters. So that's at the operational level. Whereas the Warfighter series, again, we're talking the original Bayonet Games Warfighter series, not Dan Versen running off with the name. The original Warfighter series was platoon level counters and individual sections and some individual vehicles. So it was sort of Panzer Leader, Panzer Blitz scale in the modern world. And like the first game was National Training Center, right? Brian, you know it. How many rotations did you ever do? Or were you in Europe the whole time?
I was in Europe the whole time. I was at Graf. So. I did Graf and Veer.
You did Graf, yeah.
Excuse me, Hohenfels.
Yeah, well, you shot gunnery at Graf. You got shot at by the Op 4 at Hohenfels. But
I actually played the Op 4 at Hohenfels one time.
There you go. So the original game was NTC. We had one that was the Brits in Sub-Saharan Africa, and then we had kind of a, going back to that horse and musket description of a toolkit, we had a bit of a toolkit that was overly ambitious for what we were trying to do with it, that was the World of Conflict. Or the Maneuver Warrior box that had a lot of stuff in it. And all of these things weren't just, they were designed for civilians to play and have fun as a hobby war game, but they had a lot of very military-specific touches to them. We wrote the op orders as the scenarios as 5-paragraph op orders. Obviously, you got to modify stuff for game purposes, but when you sit down to play the scenario, you get handed a 5-paragraph op order. Situation, mission, execution, like that's what got handed to you as a part of the game. That the units were not identified by, you know, like 1st platoon, 2nd platoon. They were identified by their call signs because the radio nets were relevant in who could talk to who as a part of the game. The fact that we've now finally got around to getting those kinds of tools, finally getting some traction, finally getting pushed out to actual end users in the force somewhere, and that the folks in the force aren't recoiling in horror at the fact that, oh my God, we're playing Risk for training, that they've actually accepted wargaming as something that can be a valuable professional development tool. It's awesome to see. I wish it had happened 17 years ago. So, Sebastian, keep making copies of Fleet Marine Force. You can stop when I have one. At that point, you can stop making them. But until I have one, you got to keep making them. So that way, one eventually makes it to the Dragoons that I don't have to send back. Same thing with Assassin's Mace. Anybody out there want to send a copy of Assassin's Mace over here? The Marines have the other one, the operational wargaming one. Dr. Sterrett, if you and Mike Dunn are listening, perhaps, you know, this is background music while you guys are working on your next warfighter scenario out there or whatever at Fort Leavenworth for professional reasons. You want to send me a copy of the Land Power game, I am more than happy to take it off your hands. So whatever we got out there in the professional development space, look, the UK Fight Club is organizing regular games with Flashpoint campaigns and combat mission. US Fight Club is now starting to ramp up. They had the Battle for Moscow tournament that, you want to talk about some amusing irony, Lou Coatney won the Battle for Moscow tournament. Gee, who would have thought Lou would have passionately defended Moscow at some point in his life? yeah. Who saw that coming?
Real quick, Brad. You can get Fleet Marine Force on Tabletop Simulator.
Yes. Yes, I know, because Sebastian used it for testing. I want a paper copy I can roll out on the game table here in the man cave and push my own blocks around up here. And the beauty of getting the blocks with those is Sebastian stickers them before he sends them to you.
Oh, so, my copy didn't need to be stickered. So,
yeah, there you go. So I am over the moon thrilled that the professional wargaming environment is finally starting to see and use and leverage and take advantage of some of the great innovations from the civilian wargaming market. And I hope that we can continue to push that along. That is something that we do quite a bit here with the Dragoons. We do try to live with, if not a foot in both camps, at least, you know, sort of dancing into the professional camp on a regular basis. And we would very much like to continue to do that and to see that civilian wargaming space continue to make inroads on the military and the professional side. So that is my big war game wish that with which I'm going to close the show here, because we're now well into the hour and a half mark and approaching 2 hours. With all that said, I hope everybody has a great time over the holidays, or had a great time over the holidays if you're not listening to us until like January, February, or 2023, or whenever you get around to listening to us. Mike, we got My Own Worst Enemy taking a break over the holidays coming up, or are you guys gonna be cranking along even through
Well, we got a few things come up. I still have some videos coming out, so probably nothing this week, but probably some more through the holidays, yeah.
Okay, outstanding. And Jim, Saturday Night Fights is going to be a little dicier given that Christmas and New Year's both land on Saturdays.
Yeah, it's no retreat, no surrender. We'll be here.
And say you're going to push right on through, huh?
Oh yeah. Yeah, that is going to happen.
Was there any doubt?
I hope not. I hope not.
So Jim did in fact move the Thursday Night Throwdown off of Thanksgiving.
I did involuntarily just because everybody went away on me. Yeah. And so we actually made up for it on Friday. So I'm hoping
I was a part of that mess.
Yes, you were. Yes, you were. It was a good mess indeed. We had hugely popular. To my point, I would not have bet as many people wanted to watch us play a game of Shaco about an obscure battle of the 1809 Bavarian campaign for 6 hours, but they did.
Yeah. No kidding. But you're right. They did. So it was
very cool.
Brian, you need to make more than one appearance each season anymore these days. We're going to book you for a couple coming up.
I'd be more than welcome to.
Cool. Audience, thank you all very much for joining us. And we'll catch you after the new year with our next season. We'll be going into season 8 of Mentioned in Dispatches. Everybody have a great time and keep on gaming.